And the
podcast
begins with a song of rebellion.
How can this
podcast
be my life?
CD Burners.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to CD Burners. Today, we are talking about an all-time classic. The album that changed emo music forever. Taking Back Sunday. Tell All Your Friends.
It's a huge white guy moment.
Huge moment.
For white guys. There just was. Sorry. It's just that. I know it was like hit a lot of people. I was just like, hell yeah. Fuck yeah. Like when this came out, I was like, cool. Music for me.
It was a moment. March 26, 2002. This came out on Victory Records. This is a Long Island outfit. Taking Back Sunday. It hit number 183 on the Billboard 200. And it was certified platinum last July.
What?
It took that long to certify it platinum. When it came out, it spent 68 weeks on Heat Seekers, which is the longest time that a Victory Records artist or album was on the Heat Seekers chart. It's kind still of, to this day.
It's kind of interesting that it went platinum last July and it was like the longest Heat Seeker. I wonder why. Why July? I wonder if it's because of like the...
I think it would have went platinum earlier, but this is, you know, peak Napster. I don't know. Did you pay for this album? No, I definitely didn't. I pirated the shit out of this album and every album at the time. And we were burning CDs.
Yeah, I always forget that that is the thing and the reason why.
And they really changed the qualifications for the charts because people weren't buying CDs anymore. Like now every stream, there's like a certain number of streams that equals like one purchase or whatever. The metrics have shifted a lot.
I feel like the metrics shift, like they've never been consistent. So whenever we like list off these facts, I'm like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
I never know what it means.
I know. The charts are, who knows? This band was formed in 1999 by Eddie Reyes. And the original lineup was Antonio Longo on vocals, Stephen DeJoseph on drums, Jesse Lacey on bass, John Nolan on guitar. If you don't know who Jesse Lacey is, he is the frontman and singer and principal songwriter of Brand New.
I had all the other people's names in there and I wrote Stephen something.
Stephen DeJoseph.
Yeah. I wrote Stephen something.
Fake name.
Also Antonio Longo. Fake name. Fake guy. John Nolan, we talked about this. We did a
John Nolan Mellencamp.
John Nolan and Jesse Lacey. We talked about this in our episode that we did last week, but really 10 minutes ago. But they had a high school band together called Godmunder.
Godmunder. Okay.
Yeah, and I said it in the last episode, but it sucks ass.
Yeah, it's really different. It sounds like 90s alt rock, but like made by high schoolers, which yeah, it was.
That's actually very accurate. It sounds like Pearl Jam.
It literally sounds like 16-year-olds trying to do Pearl Jam, which it is.
Yeah, and so like, God bless them. I love it. I like the fact
they
that
they cut
like,
their teeth. They're learning. They're being creative. They're making something cool.
Right.
You have to start somewhere.
Yeah, but don't get me wrong. You heard some shit that I made when I was 16, and this is like far better. But like in comparison to things in the world, and like if you guys would probably like it, I highly doubt you would. It's not. It's like jam bandy. All rock stuff. Anyway,
Jesse Lacey left the band after 3 months. There was like an original Taking Back Sunday EP, I think is their self-titled EP. Jesse is not even on the EP. He was in the band for such a short time. He just played, you know, shows with them for a few months. But when he left the band, a young Adam Lazara from Greensboro, North Carolina, called up Eddie Reyes. He had seen them play a show a few months prior in North Carolina. And he said, I heard you guys need a bassist. Like, what if I just joined your band? And then he went up to Long Island and he auditioned. And he was the new bass player for Taking Back Sunday.
Might have been the coolest thing that he's done. That's like a cool, I think that's like a cool thing to do.
I mean, he was 19. Yeah. It's a very cool, like 19-year-old thing to do. Just like pack up your shit and like join a band in Long Island and say, fuck it, I'm going for it. And It paid off.
I have to preface this episode.
Okay.
And I'm trying to leave my personal opinions at the door. I'm also going to put them in to this, but I'm also going to give credit where credit's due and look at things from a larger perspective. But I'm not the hugest Adam Lazara fan.
Yeah. Well, we have a personal bias with Mr. Lazara.
Yeah, I'm not the hugest fan of the
dude. He's not a fan of us. So.
It's fine. It doesn't matter. But at the same time, I can look at this album and go and look at his career and go, awesome. Like, here's 100%. All of the great stuff that you have done. And to be fair, you know, my opinion of him after seeing some interviews with him, I'm like, maybe, like, he seems pretty nice here.
I don't know. So, I don't know him personally, but this album is undeniable, and I don't care. It's kind of the same thing as, like, somebody looking at Brand New and Jesse Lacey. Like, I don't know him personally. He's done some shitty things and, like, hurt people. We can't look at this album and bring in bias because Adam was mean to us.
Right.
And at the same time, look at, like, Brand New and not, like, you know, at least consider that. Like, we have to separate the art from the artist here and really look at this album for what it is. And that is, like, a monumental moment in emo music.
Yeah, look at the band and the album for what it is. And that's all we're doing. Like, I did write, like, a couple funny jabs that I will put in, but I want to keep this in line with how important this was.
I mean, this is a big one. So Adam joins the band, and he's the bassist on that first self-titled EP. And then there's some lineup shakeups. I think Antonio Longo doesn't want to do it anymore. So they move Adam to lead vocals, and they bring in a guy named Sean Cooper to take over the duties on bass. And they recorded the demos for Tell All Your Friends with Mike Sapone, who is the producer behind Your Favorite Weapon. They signed to Victory Records in 2001. And then Victory, I guess, you know, they encouraged them to make this full-length album. They had a lot of success, which we talked about with Thursday's Full Collapse at the time. And so what's his fucking name from Victory was like, I want another Thursday. Let's send them to the same guys who did Thursday Full Collapse and let's make a full album. Because Jeff Rickley's giving me grief. I just want another Thursday. So he sends them to Sal Villanueva at Big Blue Meanie Studios in New York.
Very famous studio.
Sal Villanueva doesn't really have a lot of credits other than these two albums, to be honest. But he definitely had a spark here for these two records because they're two of the most monumental, seminal albums in, you know, the emo genre. And I guess they recorded this over just a period of 2 weeks.
Yeah, I remember, you know, Big Blue Meanie, the name Big Blue Meanie Studio coming up a lot. Like, when people were like, I want to record my album.
Because they liked Thursday.
Yeah, it was Sunday. It doesn't exist anymore, I don't think. But it was at the time, you know, if you were in a band and you liked all this stuff, you were like, that's a cool place to go. And you wanted, you know, that type of shit. So I do want to give one shout out before we get into all of this stuff. There's a really good YouTube video on this whole thing, the whole Brand New and Taking Back Sunday situation, by this guy, the Cozy Representative.
Mm-hmm.
Did a really good job of breaking it down and kind of taking a look at this entire thing and what it is. So yeah. Just shout out that guy.
I really like that guy, but you told me on a previous episode that you didn't like that guy.
Really?
Yeah.
No, are you sure?
I'm 100% sure. Maybe you were thinking of a different person, but I was like, I've watched a few of his videos for this podcast before, and I was like, did you watch the Cozy Representative? You're like, I don't like that guy.
I was probably thinking about somebody else, because I actually do like that guy.
Yeah.
No, I think he's good, and I think he's he looks like a really sweet...
Seems like a sweetie.
Sweet kid, and, you know, he does, a decent amount of research and looks at it from, a perspective of that I think is smart and just so shout out that guy. And if I said I didn't like you before, that was my bad. I'm sure.
I don't think you said it on the pod. You literally just said it to me in private.
I was probably
thinking, sorry for airing it out.
That's okay. I was probably thinking about somebody else or talking about somebody else because you know me. Don't know who any of these fucking like the names of things are. So there's 100% chance because I've never watched that guy and been like, I don't like this guy.
So I guess when this there's actually so much information about this album.
It's a lot. It really is a lot.
We've done a lot of really big important albums that are, you know, equally as important as this album, like Saves the Day or whatever. And like, there is not nearly as much information about some of those albums as this album. There's like the Wikipedia entry is like a book. It's so long. There's so much story to it.
Tell us about it before I start doing opinion stuff.
There's not too much left here, but all I had to say, the last few notes I have to say here about like fact stuff and not opinions, Sal Villanueva and Tim Giles, that's the producer and the engineer. Apparently they like jumped in when the guys weren't in the studio and like replaced some guitars and like changed a bunch of things. And then Taking Back Sunday heard the songs and they were like, what the fuck is this? What did you do? Why did you change this? And then they were just like, yeah, tough shit. You can't change it back.
Yeah, it does sound like they butted heads, and honestly, it does sound like the producers were in the wrong for making significant changes without telling the band.
I mean, I feel like that's common, but especially like when they're young and like he's working with Victory, and probably the guy from Victory was, I forget his name.
Yeah, the fucking douchebag from that dude. He's
probably like, make me another Thursday. So,
and I do think though, you know.
Tony Brummel. Yeah. How did I forget that? Now I just sound like one of those other guys that I get mad at.
Me? But I mean, look, at the same time, looking at it from all sides, like I do think it was, you know, I know producers change a lot of stuff and have opinions about a lot of stuff and go into an album and do stuff. But I think the changes that they made were significant enough where the band was like, hey, this sounds really, really vastly different. Like changing doubling the tempos of things.
On the blue channel, intro.
And like doing that type of shit. But at the same time, which we don't know, maybe it sucked ass.
Yeah, maybe.
So, but I do think it was, you know, I think you should really like kind of listen to a band in that situation. So I don't know. I kind of been siding with
the band
TBS on this one.
Yeah, because it's not your A&R, but I guess it is your producer. So yeah, like you do work with a producer for a reason.
Yep.
The last little tidbit that I wanted to say here is that they put this number 152 on the album covers all the time. On every single album cover, 152. And I guess what that means is it's a nod to the exit number that Adam would get off of in North Carolina when he was like going to hang out with his boys or go to shows or whatever. So that was like their little nod back to North Carolina.
That's cool.
Yeah.
It's like a nice sweet thing. It's also like pretty emo teenage guy at the time to be like highways and
roads and overpasses. Roads and shit.
Yeah. So that makes sense. You know, it sounds like they, you know, but, you know, after that whole thing where the producers changed up a ton of stuff, you know, it sounds like they got along perfectly fine. They ended up writing a song.
The Ballad of Sal Villanueva.
Yeah. Ended up writing like a bonus song that came out on like a vinyl thing that was a tribute to him. So, you know, look, you're in the studio, you're working with a ton of artists and a ton of people with creative opinions. Gonna get heated. People are gonna not have feel exactly the same about stuff. Like I get that shit. There's some stuff in the Wikipedia which you did mention that I found to not be true.
Okay.
So a lot of the stuff said the vocals were very reminiscent of Saves the Day, which I found to not be true.
I don't agree with that either.
I found that to not be true at all. And around this time, emo bands like the Get Up Kids, the Promise Ring influenced Taking Back Sunday. And while that might be true, I don't hear a lot of the Get Up Kids, Promise Ring, or Saves the Day in this album, if I'm going to be honest.
No. And I want to play one clip from this where I'm like, okay, Adam's vocals are so cool and not like anything else that we have heard thus far. And it's this ending of Ghost Man on Third. Like that flipping from singing to screaming. Does Chris ever do that? No fucking way. He couldn't. No.
No, he doesn't do that. If you know any Promise Ring songs, they don't even come close to doing that. So anyway, there's some stuff on Wikipedia that I was like, okay, well, what, anybody can write in this thing. Like, they're just using generic shit. I don't think it sounds like any of that stuff. While they might have been influenced by it for sure, I don't think it really comes out in the music. That's just my opinion. As far as the album goes, I gotta give it to them. Like, the opening riff to an album, the opening song, the opening track.
You know how I do?
Sets you up for this thing. Like, it...
Incredible riff.
And also, like, kind of given to the drummer. Like, it's not, like, really, you're not... It's a different... Saul does something that's not the same as a lot of the stuff we've heard.
Well, also, Taking Back Sunday's signature has always been like the dueling vocals, like multiple vocal parts going in a round, whether it's two or three vocalists all doing different parts. You didn't hear that on Saves the Day. You didn't hear that on Promise Ring. I think that is their signature here. And it actually, it was a decision that Eddie Reyes made when he started the band. He had another band before Taking Back Sunday, Long Island band called Clockwise. And they did the dueling vocal thing and he loved that. So when he started Taking Back Sunday, like that was like his vision for it.
I mean, it's awesome, that which is great. And I think that he deserves a lot of credit for that because it's an incredibly like influential, and to see the vision of being like, this is what I want it to sound like and have it come out sounding like that is pretty impressive and cool and, you know, iconic in a lot of ways. Like this was the first time, this was a minivan full of high school kids doing parts like one singer, A singer, B singer to each other. And, you know, I think that this was probably like the most played song or album as a CD.
Yeah.
You know, for an extended period of time.
Yeah. I had the MP3s on my iPod and I remember specific moments with certain songs where I'm like, oh my God, I remember when I came home from school that day and I was like walking up the stairs and I heard this part on Great Romances of the 20th Century for the first time. Like I can remember where I was when like a lyric like hit me
as a 15-year-old. I think that that's really interesting that you said that because there's a lot of note, like one of the biggest notes that I put in here for me was, out of all of the albums, like this album reminds me the most of like when Emo Night started.
Yeah. I mean, when we started Emo Night, it was literally called Taking Back Tuesday. Yeah.
Like this album sounds to me like the Short Stop and like the first couple of Echoplexes. And it really has, it's like nostalgia tapped on top of nostalgia. In a lot of ways. So this album is significant in a lot of different arenas in not only my life, but in like this whole scene and the emo world itself. His voice was much different from a lot of other,
I thought you were going to be like much different than it is now.
We'll talk about that later. It's different from a lot of other stuff that like emo stuff that then we heard.
Well, this to me, I think was like one of the first times I think in the genre that the frontman was really freed from an instrument, you know, like he didn't have a bass or a guitar in front of him and he was like the first like really charismatic, like frontman that I could remember.
You hit it on the head, and I think that after they played in my town, we saw a lot of frontmen from bands dropping the instrument.
Yeah, and you're like, I'm just not the bass guy anymore.
Just doing this stuff. So the influence that he had on being a frontman of a band in a scene that wasn't, and I use this term lightly, like rock star oriented, Like, he was a rock star 100%. In that every sense of...
Yeah, you know, he was like this. More... He was channeling, like, to me, and I think objectively, he's channeling Mick Jagger more than he's channeling Chris Connolly.
Yeah. Just there's no fucking... Yeah, no way in hell. I actually sectioned this stuff out. Okay, lyrically, right? I think it's, like, about as mature as, like, a high school, like, AP English.
Sure.
Guy. But again, that was a lot different than a lot of the emo bands that, to me, this made sense at the time. They were influenced by, like, really surface level, or at least, you know, things that they've talked about in interviews that I've listened to with them is like surface level, like highly intellectual stuff, like Fight Club and those things where you're like right on the surface of like really digging deep. And then you could go even further and further and further, further down. And so it was like the Joe Rogan of like,
keep in mind, this is 2002, man.
Like, I know. So like, that's the thing, but like, I'm just trying to, compare it to something where I'm like, yeah, yes. And they were young, like they were super young, but you know, if, and I don't like going back and forth, but like the episode that we spoke about with like Brand New, it's like so deep, like it's like actual deep, you know? So the lyrics are like actual deep where I feel like these are,
I don't know if I totally agree with you. I think there are some lyrics on this album where you're like, okay, that's a little dramatic, where it's like, with my one last gasp in breath. But like, think about like Brand New, like there's some that are pretty dumb on that album too.
I know.
I think maybe you're giving him more credit than is deserved, especially if we're just talking about Your Favorite Weapon. I think both of them, you know, they're coming from the same place. They're making this dramatic, like, emo music. They're both a little bit poetic. There's definitely some stuff in here where Taking Back Sunday, like they'll say a metaphor. It's not as poetic or deep as Brand New in the sense where they're like referencing the Bible, but it still like hits you in a certain way, even though the things that they're describing are more literal.
That's kind of what I'm saying. That's like really, you said it in a better way where, you know, that's, it's like the surface, like, so you don't have to, kind of, and then with like Brand New, you can keep digging. I feel like you can kind of keep digging. But again, the lyric that you just said, this album was so important because I didn't even think about it, but they kind of solidified what the cut my wrist and black my eyes trope is with this, because it was so far and wide spread. Like this was like the,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Where it's like now the emo thing that everybody that is so
you
like
could slit my throat with my one last.
Yeah. That's where I was like, I think in a lot of ways, like, you know, we give a lot of credit to Hawthorne Heights in that sense, because they were
the ones that like, they, I feel like they cheapened it in a way.
I agree with you. And like, but I think this also did that thing. If you didn't know, you know, if you heard both of those two things, those are the things that are on, that are getting played on the radio. Those are the things that are, you know, the most, you know.
And this is early though. This is 2002. Like, I think that Hawthorne Heights album that we're talking about didn't come out until 2004 or five.
Yeah. So this was like the start of that trope.
I understand 100%.
Yes. Which I, you know, ultimately like very, very important, and it's made for a lot of very great and fun and funny content. You know, in a lot of ways, I wonder what this would look like if this album didn't exist. Would emo look like would
Matt Cutchell exist?
Exactly.
I don't know.
Right? Like, would he?
I don't know.
And that's the thing. It's like, I think that there's some significant stuff that this album did, but at the same time, I think that it might have done some
Well, stereotypes have to start somewhere,
is important. Like, look, I really just trying to have a discussion about this album in a way where I'm like giving it credit and the importance at the same time, understanding that like, yeah, some it might have done some things in a negative way, negative way. I mean, saying that very loosely.
I think it's just because it is so defining. I think like this album was a big, big fucking deal, and it changed. I think it was like that new big tentpole album of that next wave coming out of Long Island and New Jersey.
Oh, and like while I don't like every song on this album.
Well, let's talk about some that you do like. I think what are your standout tracks?
I think it defined this album was the definition of that time.
This one?
No, I love the.
I mean, you can't just say no to Q without the E. Like yeah, that I mean, is like, the I most
mean,
iconic.
Yeah, but I mean, like if we're gonna talk about like my favorite tracks on the album,
standout tracks in general.
Oh yeah, fuck. That's like maybe the.
That is like the
one.
That is like the biggest song of the genre.
Yeah. Fucking crazy. Like a crazy, crazy.
Nuts. It's a really good, it's more pop punk than the rest of the album, in my opinion. And pop punk is not a word that I really ever think about when I think of Taking Back Sunday. Either. And I was kind of, you know, but then I was like listening to this today and I'm like, yeah, this is a pop punk song. But to me, they're not a pop punk band. Like pop punk is like sillier. They're more serious and emo.
I agree with you very much so. There's a good quote from Alternative Press. This dude named Brendan Manley wrote, "This album is about as close as it gets to a modern masterpiece, capturing not just a band at their apex, but an entire scene. Tell All Your Friends was the crossover breaking point, finally bringing what had been percolating for years in the East Coast from the East Coast VFW halls to the attention of the masses."
So true.
Yeah.
Another great one, and actually the first song that the band wrote together, this iteration of the lineup, was Great Romances of the 20th Century. And this song is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, the most of the songs on this album are awesome.
Do you remember, okay, I definitely like pirated this album, as I said to you. This song was on the original Tell All Your Friends demos that Mike Sapone did. And there's a version of this where there's like a movie clip playing. There's a movie clip playing over the top. It's like, "A beautiful girl will make you dizzy. She'll make your head spin." You remember that?
Wait, say it again.
It's like, "A beautiful girl will make you dizzy. She'll make your head spin," or something like that. I think they actually ended up releasing it, but I definitely had the demo version. Like I downloaded that off of like LimeWire. I will forever associate. Here it is.
"A beautiful girl can make you
dizzy." Yes. Yeah, I remember this. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Like you've been drinking Jack and Coke all morning.
"Like you've been drinking Jack and Coke all morning. She can make you feel high, full of single greatest commodity known to man. Promise. The promise of a better day. The promise of a greater hope. The promise of a new tomorrow. This particular aura can be found in the gait of a beautiful girl, in her smile and in her soul. And the way she makes every rotten little thing about life seem like it's gonna be okay."
So good.
Very good. I think we have to kind of get into it.
Well, we can start by talking about There's No I in Team. It's Taking Back Sunday, as we talked about, John Nolan and Jesse Lacey, two of the original members of this band.
John Nolan's very cool.
Is he?
Yeah, I think so.
John Nolan.
Is he nice?
I don't know. I don't know him personally, but I have had one negative interaction with him.
Huh. Yeah, we've had some very negative interactions with Taking Back Sunday.
Yeah, they don't like us.
I'll tell you guys why after, or like when we're done.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the drama surrounding this band and how it exists. So if you listened last week to the brand new episode, we might be repeating ourselves a little bit, but Here it is. Brand New is a band that was started by Jesse Lacey after he left Taking Back Sunday. Why did he leave Taking Back Sunday? Well, his friend, his best friend from childhood, John Nolan, made out with a girl that he liked before he could. And he said, "What the hell, John Nolan? You know that I liked her. I'm done with you. I'm quitting the band and I'm not going to talk to you anymore." So Jesse starts a band. It's called Brand New. They create this song called 70 times 7, where Jesse details the happenings of the evening where this transgression transpired. They were at a party, I guess, and John and this girl were in another room, and Jesse's hanging out around the kitchen, and he's like, "He would never do that to me." And then it happens, and Jesse finds out, and he is pissed. He wishes that John Nolan would drive home drunk and hit ice and fly through the windshield and die. And it is quite a dramatic bridge on 70 times 7.
You know how they make, you know how you can like go to the like Anne Frank house?
Yeah.
They should make this house.
Yeah, go to the kitchen where
they should do
where
that.
They had this house party in Long Island.
That's what you should, they should make this house into a
house into a home. So that's 70 times 7.
Right.
So then Taking Back Sunday fires back at Brand New, and they take all the lyrics from the bridge of 70 times 7 and they throw them in to the bridge of their song, There's No I in Team. I'm actually like shocked that they didn't give Jesse Lacey a writing credit, because they just literally take all the lyrics. Is that what you call tact? You're as subtle as a brick and the small of my back. So let's end this call and end this conversation. This is literally straight from 70 times 7. And then the other vocal on top of it is going, "That's right, he said it." It's kind of like a hip hop like hype man being like, "That's right, he said it." Like he just is like hyping him up. He's like, "Oh my God, can you believe he's calling him out like this?" Best friends means I pull the trigger. Best friends means you get what you deserve.
And like, yeah, like I said in the Brand New episode, is like, this was kind of the first time that we heard some direct hits at another band in this scene. So, you know, while it was like both of these things were incredibly significant happening around the same time. And again, also some of the first time we've heard some of these lyrics, like styles of being like so violent and, oh, you can say that type of shit in this type of music. You know, it's not just about, you know, my ex-girlfriend. It's about, you know, there's like, I think that this was an exploratory time for a lot of artists to be like, well, we can do something different. We can do something, we can go outside of like what this thing is. It's a way smaller thing than the world made it, like we talked about in the episode with Brand New. And John said, I saw John say in this video, which I think is a perfect summary of what this all is that the art that came out of it was way more interesting than the thing itself.
Yeah.
And that is what it is. And they, you know, again, it is hard to do this one without talking about the other one, but they went on to tour together after this. When Taking Back Sunday was, you know, they played a bunch of shows there. They wrote on fucking some whatever, like takingbacksunday.com or whatever the fuck.
Yeah,
it was.
I did kind of want to talk about this.
Yeah.
So what you're saying here is like they would post blogs on their website, and you know, this is before Twitter and all that kind of stuff. Like they would be like, "Oh, hey, we were playing this show with Brand New. Guys, if you haven't heard about Brand New, you should check them out." Like
2 months before Tell All Your Friends came out in 2002. They were posting this shit.
And there were multiple instances of them like shouting out Brand New, playing shows together, which, you know, leads some people to believe that maybe this beef wasn't really as, you know, serious as they thought it was.
I mean, I think another reason why you're like so serious is because like, if you take a listen to some of the lyrics, you're like, this is serious.
He's telling me that he wants me to fucking get into a car accident and die.
Yeah.
Wow. He must have really done something terrible.
Yes. So I think it's understandable why people were like, this is a big deal.
Well, let me just go back to the website stuff. So they're multiple posts archived from takingbacksunday.com where they're, you know, shouting out Brand New and saying like, you guys should check them out. They're going to be awesome. Or they're so good. Emo Night publicly got into a little bit of a beef with Taking Back Sunday back in 2015, 2016. I remember going to twitter.com and pulling up old tweets that Taking Back Sunday had posted about Emo Night prior to the beef, saying they started this new party called Taking Back Tuesday. You guys should definitely go check it out. It's really fun. It's a fun time. And that was from Taking Back Sunday's Twitter account. And that was just something that their manager like had just, you know, posted. I don't think she ran it by the guys or anything like that, but it's just interesting.
That is interesting.
That I'm like, okay, so maybe I don't know if Taking Back Sunday is always the ones writing these posts on their websites or on Twitter or whatever. Maybe there actually is beef here, and maybe these posts are kind of like
trying to social media manage it a little bit.
I personally think that they're both just coming from the manager. I think that Jillian is posting those things.
Nice, nice conspiracy.
And I don't think that like Adam or John is sitting there updating takingbacksunday.com. And I think there might actually have been more beef than the website or the tweets were making it out to be. Well, as you can see,
yes,
with their beef with us.
Yes, which we have firsthand experience.
Yes.
With. So it is strange because like what you just did, I feel like this was literally like people's first experience with what QAnon is. Like this was like the people's first, like, I'm going to dive deeper into that and like conspiracy theory. Like I bet all the people that like really took apart these things and were like, this word means this and this thing means this. Like I bet when like that shit happened, they were like forefront on the internet being like, ooh, yes. Like, I feel like this was that first taste of, what does this mean? This mean, this mean.
Yeah. I mean, this is what we talked about on the last episode, the Swifties. And that is such a group of fans that just goes and analyze, and she plays into it all the time. Like she puts these like Easter eggs in all the artwork and, you know, she'll capitalize like certain words. Like she plays into it.
This I don't think was, I think this is just complete.
But still, it's that same sort of level of fandom. And what they did with the beef here with Brand New was really smart. It was a really smart way for both of these bands. I think both of them liked it. I think they enjoyed the attention that the public beef was getting. I think I actually saw a video with Adam and John where they were like, yeah, we were listening to a lot of Nas and Jay-Z at the time. And we thought, how funny would that be if like we had a like brought a hip hop beef to emo? Like they kind of admitted that they did it a little bit on purpose. That being said, I do think that there is some underlying animosity. There was a quote from Adam in 2015 where he was like, yeah, Jesse Lacey's an asshole. He's a piece of shit. I don't like him at all.
Well, that being said, you know, and like again, shout out the Cozy representative on YouTube because he had the conspiracy about that. And while it might not be true that these things, you know, all alleged is, you know, he might've known about what was going on with like Brand New and trying to get ahead of it.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, maybe.
And I think that that's actually like, you know, knowing how this fucking bullshit machine works, he's probably right. You know, probably a little insider baseball there.
One thing that we didn't cover, the Gabe Saporta connection here.
We did not.
It's our favorite section of the podcast. All roads lead to Gabe. Gabe was with Jillian Newman, their manager, out here in LA. And they were going through a press package from Victory Records that had some promo copies of a bunch of different bands. And they threw this one on. And Gabe was like, this is good. You should manage this. Should.
Yeah, it's. He's
the Forrest Gump of music.
It's fucking crazy how much he's just like, how is he everywhere all at once?
It's nuts. There's also some drama with the band right after this album came out. Not Jesse Lacey related, but Adam and John had a falling out.
Oh, yeah. Here. Okay. Look, man, Adam Lazara just has alcoholism.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, he has a spiritual malady and he needs God in to fill this God-sized hole that he is missing.
I think he has gone through a couple programs a few times. I don't know where he's at currently. I hope the best for him and that he's finding, you know, whatever he needs to.
Me too. And I hope that, like, when he was, like, fucking, like, a dick about to us, I hope he was just going through a thing, because I've definitely been there.
For
sure. The reason why I can, you know, why I'm like, oh, yeah, this guy has alcoholism is because I have that. And so, like, recognizing the patterns and, like, doing some dumb shit, being like, fuck, dude, fuck. I'm not actually that person. And so that's why I'm looking at this guy being like, I'm hoping that the best. And while he's done some things that were, like, really shitty to us and said some stuff to us, like, what I hope is at the end of the day is it's just like, fuck, dude, you know, we've got a disease of the body and mind. And I think that, you know, a lot of the stuff that he has done and a lot of the stories that were, you know, getting recounted are just, like, legitimate straight up examples of alcoholism.
Well, let's talk about a little bit of this story here. I guess Adam Lazar was dating John Nolan's sister, Michelle, and he cheated on her at one point. And I read somewhere that he told John and, you know, apologized, and, like, I think they were all good, but then they were on the bus and Adam, I think, was probably wasted.
Yes,
and was like,
that's a wasted thing to do.
Yeah. I wasn't that fucking serious. I don't give a shit. And then John overheard him and he was like, bro, what the hell? I have to quit the band. And then Sean Cooper also quit the band alongside him. He said, I don't want to be in the band if John's not going to be in the band. Yeah. That led to a few months where they had to cancel their tour in the UK and they didn't really know what the future was. And at the same time, like, this album was just blowing the fuck up. And that led to Fred Mascherino joining the band.
Fred is the guy that we fuck with.
I love Fred.
Yeah. Fred rocks.
I think Fred is better than John.
Yeah. Okay. I messed up. I was wrong.
I think Fred is a better singer and guitar player than John. And I like the music that they made on Where You Want to Be even more than this album.
I think anybody is a better singer than Adam Lazara.
That's true. John's a decent singer, but Adam is nowadays not so good.
Said it before, and, you know, gives a fuck and, like, happy to whatever, but I've seen him play so many times at this point, and they sound like a bad Taking Back Sunday cover band.
A lot of the comments too on, like, these clips that have gone viral being like, look how bad they are like, this is just how he's always sounded. You guys are wrong. Like, you could just have never seen them before. And it's like, no, dude, I have seen them before. I've seen them a lot.
Bitch, don't gaslight me. I saw them fucking when they came through, you know?
Yeah, they did not always sound this bad.
No. And so, you know, it's whatever. It's like it is a thing. I hope he gets the help that, you know, or has the help that he needs. And I am here as an open ear and understand, and I'm not mad.
A couple quick things here on the liner notes. Very interesting thing on the liner notes too, that we didn't talk about. Jesse Lacey is thanked in the liner notes.
He put fucking John through, like, a lot of shit.
Yeah.
Like, definitely. I think that's where I was like, John's, like, a good dude because he keeps, you know.
Well, it took a long time for them to reconcile and for John to join the band again.
Yeah, I remember that. And, like, I'm just like, but still, to, like, you've dealt with me, you know, it's a hard thing to deal with. And then to be like, all right, fine, all of those things, like, all those, fuck, dude, like, it's like, it's like a good dude thing to do. And just, like, you know, knowing recently where, like, you know, seeing them recently and hearing stuff about them recently, I'm like, God damn, dude, this guy must have just been putting up with bullshit for fucking years, you know? And so, like, I think in my head, I'm just like, he's gotta be, like, a pretty good guy, You know, I don't know, but I don't fucking know. I'm just assuming. All of this stuff is also assuming.
Another interesting liner note, bringing up some more of these characters in these stories. John Nolan's sister, Michelle Nolan, she sang on Bike Scene and Ghost Man on Third. She and John would later go, when he left Taking Back Sunday, John and Michelle started Stray Light Run together. That's about it for like interesting liner notes. Neil Rubinstein, he later became their tour manager. He sang on There's No I in Team, Timberwolves Out of New Jersey, and Head Club. I think whenever they needed like a third voice, he like jumped in there. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, that is cool. Like there's so much around it. They do have like separating all of this shit. And they're like, you think about like the Rolling Stones and like all of these like big rock bands that have had their Motley Crue and all of those things where people like, it's like so much inner fighting and like public fighting and all, and I'm leaving, I'm quitting on stage, I'm fighting on stage. And it's just like, you know, these guys in a small way, I think have that appeal or did have that appeal to like our scene.
They had that drama.
They had that
intriguing rock star drama.
And while the thing with Jesse Lacey was literally probably like a 3-month period of time or even less, who knows, you know what I mean? Like not a big thing. The fact that you have these personalities add fuel to that fire.
For sure.
And why it makes that and this thing so interesting. And so that being said, Is that a good or a bad thing that, you know, he is like this? Maybe good, and probably did a lot of stuff for it. Is it bad? Because fucking who knows, you know? Yeah. It's like but it does, you know, this album in particular, like, solidified so much stuff. It was so influential. And I really do, you know, I want to give credit where credit's due. It was pretty mind-blowing to be a fucking teenager and hearing this for the first time. You go, that's my style of music.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's wrap this up with some If You Like This, You Might Like That. For me, I wrote down Hop Mulligan.
Oh, that's a great one.
I think that his voice and the way he sings is the closest we get to vintage Adam Lazara these days.
That's a great one. I don't know if I can... I don't know if I have a better one.
Yeah?
I actually, there's so much surrounding these like two episodes that I just completely forgot to do that for this one.
Yeah, I mean, Taking Back Sunday is such a important band, and this album in particular, I think, influenced so many bands that came after them with their dueling vocals, you know, the, like you said, the frontman stuff. They really created a whole new batch of bands and fans in this genre.
And, you know, like, that being said, like, I understand the, like, the wanting to protect. It's a strange thing. Let's talk about it, like, really quick on this. You know, what happened was we were at Taste of Chaos. It was Taste of Chaos. And Adam, we were vending and just doing, like, some interviews. This was in 2015. You know, we're just walking around like loving everybody. Everybody's like, this is so sick. Like, you know, and it's not, you know, it wasn't the When We Were Young festival that we all know exists now. It was smaller, right? This was like a small, wasn't small, but it was not big. You know, it was a very, wasn't popping like it was, you know, just call it like it is. It just wasn't, we were doing something that was a little bit out of the norm. It wasn't like cool. And, you know, in our minds we go, we just love this shit and we're playing it and it's awesome that people are coming out in LA at the time to hear this stuff and sing it with us. And we are like, we're paying tribute, you know, and really appreciating this stuff. And I can understand somebody being like, you're taking something that I did and making it yours, when like, you know, no, it's like, it's not, just doing it with a lot of bands. And in fact, like, I think, you know, exposing more people to it and keeping artists that were, you know, defunct and getting back together because we're showing appreciation for it and showing that people like fucking never went away and that people like love it regardless, you know, I think did more of a service than a disservice, but I understand.
Okay, you kind of lost the story.
Oh, what did I do?
So we were at Taste of Chaos.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Fuck, dude. Sorry. So we were at Taste of Chaos and we're just walking around and, you know, from on stage, like Adam goes like, here, emo nights here. Those motherfuckers owe me money. You know, we're like, what?
It was like a huge deal at the time. Like for us, we were like, holy shit. Adam Lazar just like fucking bashed us from stage. That's crazy. It was a big deal.
Yeah, there was like articles written about it.
That same day he had done an interview with Forbes and they had a new album coming out at the time. And the writer asked them a bunch of questions about the new album, but I think he mentioned, he was like, what do you guys think about Emo Night or Taking Back Tuesday? He said something like, those motherfuckers owe me some money. They need to be careful with that shit. And the guy from Forbes just like took the article and like only talked about that.
Yeah. I mean, that's, and look, in my mind, I'm like, ego, rock star mentality mixed with alcoholism. And I don't know, you know, I can understand it and sympathize and empathize with it. But at the same time, I think looking at it from a, you know, like I can look at it from his perspective. I just don't think that he might have ever taken a look and looked at it from a perspective of like, hey, dude, we really, really fucking like your band and would be happy to like do anything you want.
They got their big payday with When We Were Young the last couple of years based off of the work that we did. So it's a mutually beneficial thing. Yeah,
we gave it to you. There you go.
Yeah.
You got it. You got your money.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for listening to CD Burners. We're going to leave it there with Taking Back Sunday. Yeah, I hope you enjoyed this episode.
Yeah, I fucking can't wait to see what this does. But anyway, the album is fucking awesome. I don't see why you would be listening to this if you've never heard Taking Back Sunday.
Yeah, if you're listening to this podcast, you like this album.
Yeah, you either saw a clip of like me talking shit and now you're like, what is this? But it's awesome. It's an incredible, influential album. And I would love to have Adam on the show.
All right. Adam, give me a call. You got my number, I think. So goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.